When you study anthropology, most of the time, your loftiest goal is finding an unknown, long-dead civilization. Getting to make first contact with a living, breathing, and brand new culture was like finding the Holy Grail in a field full of four-leaf clovers. So, needless to say, that when my team and I got the opportunity, we were over the moon. Our boat cut through the waters off the coast of Brazil, towards the modestly sized island. My crew was small, but experienced. Amy, Greg, myself, and our translator, Miguel. Why bring a translator to a totally uncontacted tribe? Well, it didn't hurt, hoping that the tribe spoke Portuguese somehow. We all knew it was a snowball's chance in hell, but you never know. Our boat slowed as we neared the beach. We landed softly, and our spirits were higher than ever. God, what a rush. The game plan was to lead with Miguel, obviously. The other three of us didn't exactly look local, even on the mainland, so we were hoping that Miguel, having at least close to the same skin tone, would help. There are about 50 feet of beach in front of us, followed by a dense tree line. You couldn't see more than 5 feet into the brush, so naturally, the three of us imagine a tribe 6 feet in. We were excited, but we knew what we were doing was dangerous. Uncontacted tribes tend to be violent to outsiders. We didn't want to look like we were bringing an army. That's why there was only 4 of us. Saying we'd be outnumbered was an understatement. Even more, we had no idea the state of the island people on any level. Was it one giant tribe? Maybe small ones? We could have been walking into a war zone for all we knew. Walking into the tree line wasn't much better than suicide. So we waited. It was a beautiful day. The beach was calming. I could wait until someone stumbled upon us. It was only about an hour before we heard a yell from beyond the trees. We all instantly jumped. Miguel took point. We all had to be trained to shoot before our outing, and we were all given a pistol and a knife for self-protection. My hand instantly went to my gun, but it stayed holstered. Slowly, from the tree line, a small troop of native men approached. Each of them held a drawn bow, pointed towards us. They were dark-skinned, shirtless, and each was covered with dark red tattoos, head to toe. The tattoos were different on each person, but they were just as intricate as they were unique. They were all rather skinny. A few had pot bellies, but otherwise they seemed strong and healthy. They all had short hair, minus the one leading the brigade, who had long, braided hair down to the middle of his back. They inched towards us at a snail's pace. Each of them stepped in unison. They had definitely trained for situations like this. The long-haired one yelled something. I had no idea what it was. Miguel said something back. Couldn't tell what it was either. "What's going on?" Amy whisper yelled through her teeth at Miguel. "I'm asking if they speak Portuguese." Miguel turned and faced Amy to say it. Smart. We didn't want them thinking we were doing anything sneaky. He turned back to them and tried to communicate again. There were a few sentences back and forth, with the Portuguese word for Portuguese being brought up by Miguel each time. Their bows were still drawn. Each of us had at least 2 arrows aimed on us. The long-haired leader seemed to be agitated with Miguel. But suddenly, one of the men on his right spoke up. I picked out one of the words that didn't mean anything to me, but he said it many times. "Ajocador," he said at least once in each sentence. The leader took a moment before lowering his bow and turning to his small battalion. They all kept their bows up. "Ajocador," he asked them as a group. One agreed immediately and repeated it back to him, then another and another. Slowly but surely, they all lowered their bows. "I like this Ajocador thing," Greg joked to the rest of us. 4 other soldiers slowly circled us and ended up behind us, leaving their leader in front of us, He nodded and said another sentence in whatever language he spoke. He beckoned us with his hand and turned around. He wanted us to follow him. The optimist screamed in my head that we were in, and I only really cared to listen to the optimist at this point. We entered the tree line and followed the long-haired man, and we were followed by his soldiers. It was only a minute or two before Amy asked what a jucado meant to Miguel. "I don't know," he admitted. "It could mean throw them a feast for all I know." Greg and I looked at each other, smiled, and nodded our heads. "Or it could mean let's skin them alive in town square. It's a toss-up," he finished. Greg and I stopped nodding at each other. It was a short walk to their village. Not more than 10 minutes. It consisted of about 20 huts, all in a rough circle, some closer and some further from the center. A giant fire pit was the centerpiece. There were a few more people out and about, mostly women and children. The women shared the red tattoos, but had much fewer of them. But their faces were pierced all over. Their eyebrows, lips, noses, ears. It seemed like each woman shared this. The children didn't seem to have their tattoos or piercings yet, and were busy chasing each other between the huts. That is, until they saw us. Every person in town turned to stare at us. A few of the women said something. One of the few men grabbed a child and clung onto her. The soldiers around us didn't seem to care. They continued onto one of their far huts. Two of the soldiers took guard outside the hut, while the leader stepped inside. Miguel followed him, and I followed Miguel. Inside was a man, sitting on a large woven bed. He looked much like the soldiers, short hair, tattoos. The two locals talked for a moment. The topic was clearly the aliens that had landed on their shore. It was a short chat before the leader left us in the hut with a new man. He spoke to Miguel. His language sounded more familiar. A smile crossed Miguel's face as he responded. He turned to us. "He speaks Portuguese." Greg, Amy, and I looked at each other like we had just struck gold. It was another minute before we got more information. Miguel filled us in. "He has been to the mainland. His name is a jucado. I have told him we are here for academic purposes and to extend an olive branch. He says he will translate for us," he announced excitedly. I almost fainted. This couldn't have been going better in my wildest dreams. "Oh my God," I yelled as I hugged Amy and then Greg. Having to go from the native language to Portuguese to English was a pain we were all willing to easily look over. We exited the tent, and a jucado took a stance near the center of the town. He announced something loudly. He had the attention of the whole tribe, even more poking their heads out of their own huts. Once he was done, the townspeople seemed to relax a bit, and the long-haired man came over to greet us again. A jucado told us we were welcomed by the town, and the long-haired man, the chieftain, even offered to call their sister tribe for a celebration in a few days. We graciously accepted, of course. We were treated like family for the next 2 days. We learned how they prepared their food and spices. We learned a local sport where they used a ball of tree bark and had to carry it between two goals. But they had to balance it on the end of a stick the whole time. They couldn't touch it with their bodies. They were ridiculously skilled at it, even though it sounded impossible. Full contact as well. I was sore the next morning. We learned that the children getting their tattoos and piercings was a rite of passage into adulthood. This was absolutely incredible. I had a big interest in their sister tribe. Shortly after we initially arrived, we heard what sounded like a horn in the distance. A jucado explained it was the other tribe. It was such an interesting sound. I'd never heard a horn quite like it. I grilled the Juggado about the sister tribe, to the point I think he was getting tired of me. Still though, he answered all my questions. Apparently, the other tribe wasn't a fifth of the size of their own, but they still controlled about 80% of the island. He explained that hundreds of years ago, the two tribes warred, and Ajukado's tribe was defeated. They still respected the borders that their forefathers had agreed on, even though the tribes had been on good terms longer than any of them had been alive. The emissary from the sister tribe coming to the celebration that had been planned was a great honor for their tribe. I was disappointed with that. Apparently, only one of them was coming. Ajukado assured me, though, it was a good thing. Any more than one of them showing up would mean a party that would never end. It came to our third day on the island, and the first thing I heard was Greg asking about the celebration. The chieftain explained to him, through our two translators, that it would be that night, and would be in the honor of the white men. "Hey, that's what I like to hear," I smiled as I jabbed Greg in the shoulder. Greg was in similar spirits as the chieftain continued. He said something along the lines of, "Oh yes, the entire village has learned to love the white men." We told Amy later after she woke, and she was a little jealous. We told her it was going through two translators. They definitely meant all of us. It just got lost in translation. I had a binder full of notes already, and I spent the rest of the day adding to it. But I decided to leave it back in the hut during the party. I could fill in some stuff about the sister tribesmen and the celebration from memory. And it wasn't long before darkness had fallen, and the party was on. Even more culture to write about. The fire in the center of the town was twice as tall as either of the other nights. They danced and played music, and we drank a sweet alcohol they made from fermented fruits. It was a few hours of good times and dancing. I had forgotten the man from the sister tribe was even supposed to attend. Suddenly though, out of the darkness of the brushes, the horn sounded again. This time, much closer than I had heard it the other day. The locals cheered in unison as they scrambled to their seats around the fire. The chieftain gathered us outsiders up and pushed us to our seats, a big, goofy, drunken smile on his face the whole time. Everyone, but Miguel, that is. He had taken him out in front of the fire and excitedly announced something. What was it? I couldn't guess. I looked back over towards where the sound of the horn was coming from, and I was suddenly confused. There was a pair of white poles just on the tree line. Where did those come from? I looked back over to Miguel and the chieftain, and they were still carrying on. I thought it wouldn't be much of a welcome for the guest of honor. Again, I looked back to the trees and the white poles. They connected at the top and kept going, weirdly. My eyes followed the structure up further, and was met by a colossal face looking at the fire. Those weren't poles. They were legs. A giant, 30-foot tall thing stood on the tree line. It was lit only by the giant fire, but I could make out enough. Its skin was eggshell white. For how tall it was ghastly how skinny it was. It stood there, only in a loincloth, as its troublingly human eyes stared at the dancing fire. The hairs dropped to its shoulders and matched its ghostly white skin, and his mouth on its elongated head hung open limply. I couldn't figure out how to comprehend what I was looking at, let alone point it out. It stood there, silently, for about a minute, watching Miguel and the chieftain and the fire. Suddenly, it stepped out into the open, and everyone now turned to it. I was still stunned, speechless. It reached towards the fire. And Miguel? He was the last one to notice it. He didn't even get a chance to get a good look at it, before the thing's fingers were clasped around him. Miguel screamed as he was hoisted into the air as he finally got a good look at it. Amy, Greg and I were all completely thunderstruck. The locals looked on with bated breath. Miguel did his best to struggle and scream, but he was only in the thing's grasp for a few seconds before it tightened its grasp, and he went limp. The locals went wild in celebration. An absolute cry of glee rang out. We looked on in horror as the ghostly white skeleton of a man turned around and trudged back into the forest, Miguel's corpse still in hand. None of the locals even watched it leave. They just laughed and drank and danced even harder than they already had been. I think it was Amy who came to her senses first. The next minute or so was a blur, but I know we were running through the woods. I ran harder than I ever had. I don't know if any of the islanders followed us. I couldn't hear anything. It was like my body put all of its resources into running. We got back to the boat in what had to be under a minute. Full throttle out of there. I would have paddled too if I had an oar. We circled around the side of the island on the way back to the mainland. I looked back to the island that Miguel died on. One of them stepped onto the beach and in the moonlight looked back at me.